That's coming up later in the show. But first, it's never easy to start your own business. It's even tougher to keep it open. During the COVID-19 pandemic, a prolonged crisis that's like nothing we've seen in our lifetimes, small business owners are facing incredible and sometimes insurmountable challenges without a clear end in sight. This has forced many to make tough decisions to close their doors permanently. What's the best way to help people get their small business through such a unique and extended crisis? We're turning now to two people who've had eyes on what business owners are experiencing over this past year and the role that it plays in all of our lives. David Lin is the former CEO of the regional coffee chain Espresso Royale, also former owner of Bubble Island, a bubble tea shop in Ann Arbor, two businesses that were forced to close amid the pandemic. He started a new crowdfunding philanthropy project called the COVID Rescue Fund, aimed at helping fellow business owners who are struggling right now. Dave Lin, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks for having me.
And Jeffrey Sanchez-Burks is here with us, too. He's a behavioral scientist and a professor of business administration at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business. He's also faculty director of the Impact Studio, which uses design thinking and process in the service of social impact. Jeffrey, it's good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Dave Lin, I wanted to start with you. You had to make the really heartbreaking choice to close down your businesses as a result of the COVID pandemic. Can I just ask, how are you doing?
Well, you know, I'm doing the best I can. I think that it took me a while to kind of, you know, get over it. You know, you mentioned, you know, those two businesses, Espresso Royale and Bubble Island. Both of those things I had been operating for a long time, the bubble tea shop for 20 years. And when I shut that down, around 300 people lost their jobs. And a lot of them were veteran employees that had been there for decades. And so it really took a toll. I would say that I was emotionally bankrupt for a while, but then after a while, I realized that, hey, you know, if I took my venture capital background, I have a chance to combine all this together to turn my negative experience to make a positive difference in this world.
300 people. Does that include your hourly workers? And who else would be included in that number?
The 300 people, so, you know, a lot of part-time workers, but within that number, there are people that are long-time store managers, long-time coffee roasters, you know, long-time assistant managers, you know, people that are putting their hearts into the business to make it successful. They just love it. And so it was talking to those people that made it particularly difficult. They were all great about it. They understood. But it's still hard to tell someone, hey, you know, you just spent the last 20 years making this place as great as it could be. You've put your heart and soul into it as much as everyone else. And the business is going away. You're losing your job. And we can't pay severance. I'm sorry, because the business is gone.
Was there a point with either business? I don't know if it happened both at the same time, but was there a point at which you knew you were going to have to do this?
It happened so fast, April. Like, it was kind of a no-brainer decision. The bubble tea shop in Bubble Island that I've had forever usually would do something like $3,000 a day during this time period. And the last week that we were open, it was doing $30 a day. So it's like, how long can you sustain that with or without any government programs that were going to come out? And the answer for me was, it's just too much. You know, like doing that for a month might be okay. 2 months would be pushing it. So it was an easy decision, but a hard thing to do.
Jeffrey Sanchez-Burks, I wanted to ask you a question. If a business owner is fortunate and forward-thinking, she or he will have some kind of plan for the worst-case scenarios that life throws to us, a fire, a flood, a blizzard, you know, some sort of major power outage or you know, an earthquake. Maybe there's even a succession plan. But I can't think of anybody I've run across who was thinking about how to keep operating during a pandemic. How do you see COVID confounding our conventional wisdom about what keeps businesses and their place in our livelihood alive?
Yeah, it's interesting. You can think of it as similar to a natural disaster, an earthquake or whatnot. The challenge, of course, is those are punctuated moments where maybe there's some warning. But when it's over, there's the recovery. And I think what you're seeing, what you're hearing, is there's so much uncertainty about when will it end and what will that look like. In some ways, it's like this paper that's been crumpled up for a year, and it's still being unfolded, and we're still learning where these creases, where these wrinkles are. And so it's not just impossible to have planned for this. It's an evolving dynamic. It's an evolving landscape. And so there's a lot of emotional complexity that goes with that. It's not that you can just begin emotionally and financially recovering. It's still a journey. It's a unique experience compared to many other disasters.
I mean, can you think of any other reference points in which this country's ecosystem has been challenged in this way, this sort of slow motion car wreck?
Well, I think about, the last pandemic, and which came on the heels of a world war, and also about the Depression. There are people who never changed, who never recovered, so to speak. If you have grandparents that grew up in the Depression, they'll pick up pennies and sew their socks. There are people who come back from war who never change. And what we're seeing is it's, again, not as if this hurricane went by and now we can rebuild and just go back to normal. There's a lot of variation in individuals and business experience about what has happened and what is happening. And there are some imprints of this that will last forever. And for others, it will be a thing in the past. And I think that's really important, is to remember there's a lot of emotional complexity out there. And unlike in the past, when norms of professionalism can say, well, your emotions are something that's inappropriate in the workplace, it's that there's just a lot of complexity out there that we're going to need to acknowledge and navigate together.
This is such an interesting question about how all of our habits will change, and sometimes permanently, during this time. Dave Lynn, your business has relied on a couple of different things. Certainly caffeine addiction, or I guess bubble tea affinity. But also, to a great degree, just people's daily habits. You know, I'm walking this way, I'm going to stop in, I'm going to grab a coffee. And also the momentary serendipity of seeing a place that looks welcoming and, oh, they've got something I like, and just stopping in, the momentary decisions to buy something. And it just feels like the habits and the momentary decisions have been completely wiped out by what we're all going through right now in many areas of Michigan. Dave, did you hear from customers who wanted to visit but couldn't, or just were afraid to be in stores anywhere?
Absolutely. So we experienced every color of the rainbow you can imagine. You know, you had people that were saying things like, oh, we can't wait for you guys to be open again, or, you know, what, you know, we want to come and see you, we miss you guys. And then you have the flip side of people saying, why are you bothering? This is all a joke. You know, COVID isn't real. People are overreacting, and like people getting angry at us for trying to take precautions. So you really kind of experience all of that. And in a volume business, like a coffee shop or bubble tea shop, you know, you're going through, you know, 400 or 500 tickets a day. And if you lose, you know, 10%, 20%, that's a disaster. Here we're losing, you know, 70%, 80%. So it was much worse.
Jeffrey Sanchez-Burks, it feels like there's been this time when we all feel like we've been treading water in a number of different ways. Just a few more months, just a few more months till we get to the vaccine, just a few more months until I get my dose of the vaccine, and then we'll be, quote unquote, sing it with me, back to normal. At what point do we as consumers, or do we as business owners, or do we as workers have to say, this is the normal right now?
One of the things that was frustrating early on was the use of this expression, social distancing, when in reality, people meant physical distancing. During disasters, during uncertainty, there is a natural human yearning for connection and bonding. And you're seeing this a lot. And I think I loved your question about the serendipity of tea shops or coffee shops. People are yearning for these social connections. And so if you're an organization in which you're trying to make the most of when people come into the office, there needs to be a focus on creating what could be called immensely human interactions or immensely human moments where work that can be done asynchronously, fine, let that be done asynchronously, but how can we foster these moments when people can come together, share their stories, see each other's smiles, you know, as you're seeing businesses in you know, context where it is perfectly legal and safe for fully vaccinated people not to wear masks, to be able to see with greater fidelity other human beings in 3D and have those connections. So it's a really important opportunity not to just go back to putting people in cubicles. There's a wonderful opportunity to maybe create a more immensely human form of work. And again, in the important role of coffee shops and tea shops, especially on a college campus, can't wait to have more and more of those moments, because that's when you do get to have these random conversations or meet with friends and or simply work in the context of other human beings.
This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. My guests today are Dave Lin, the CEO of the coffee chain Espresso Royale and the former owner of Bubble Island, a bubble tea shop. He had to shut down his businesses during the course of the pandemic, and he started a new fundraising effort that's aimed at helping other small businesses who are struggling. And we're also talking today with Jeffrey Sanchez Burks of Michigan Ross School of Business, faculty director of the Impact Studio, about some of the sociological impacts that we're all experiencing as workers, as employers, and as customers in this moment. Dave Lin, early on in the pandemic, there was this thought, well, of course, you know, the government can do something for businesses. The CARES Act was passed to try to help small businesses pull through. Were those interventions of much help from your perspective?
I actually think the government has done a huge amount of good work for small businesses. You mentioned the CARES Act and the PPP loan. There's the EIDL loans, and there's now the Restaurant Revitalization Funds, which recently launched. I think those are fantastic and have helped so many people stay alive. The unfortunate truth or the reality is that these are one-size-fits-all solutions. And in reality, nothing fits all. There is no one-size-fits-all. So what's happening is you have a lot of people that are falling through the cracks that have a lot to offer our communities, but they're, for whatever reason, they are ineligible to use any of these programs.
Yeah. I know that there are businesses in Michigan who have been able to ride it out, and there are even restaurant and retail spaces that have been doing pretty good business lately, depending on what their local situation is and what their workforce situation is. But it does feel like we have most of the state's businesses on a kind of extended starvation diet. There's still a lot of sectors that have lost employees during this time. Dave, what is your observation of what this has been like for business owners? And, you know, based on your own experience and people that you've been talking to.
So I think generally speaking, all of the applicants at the COVID Rescue Fund that I've been talking to, we are all reacting to this impression that the general population feels like COVID is in the past. And for people that have not experienced hardship, they don't understand that there's a whole generation of small business owners that are struggling and desperate. And I'm not talking about the typical stories that are in the news, like the restaurateur or the coffee shop owner. No, I'm actually talking about people like a yoga studio owner who's focused on teaching people how to be healthy and how to be physically fit. And that person's been doing it for decades. That person, what's next for them? They might be working at McDonald's. You know, I'm talking about, I recently had an applicant. He's a Taekwondo instructor. He's trained Olympians. He's trained US national champions. He spent his whole life doing that. Where is he supposed to go next? What does his resume say? You know, where is he going to do? You know, like, what is he going to do? And so, like, I think generally speaking, my impression is that this generation of small businesses is being swept under the rug and ignored. And it is impossible to understand what the ripple effects of losing these small businesses are going to have on our communities. And I think this misuse of talent is a huge tragedy that we all need to wake up to. I think we need to get these people back to work, so that our communities can be healthy and thrive again.
Yeah. Dave Lynn, the COVID Rescue Fund that you started, I wanted to ask you a bit more about that. This is a volunteer-operated project, and it's aiming to help small businesses in Michigan, but also in other parts of the country that are struggling. How did you get this idea that your next thing was going to be helping the other businesses that were under the gun?
That's a great question. You know, like I said earlier, you know, it took me a long time to digest what had happened to me personally when COVID came and those businesses closed. And I think that I felt generally a bit of a frustration and a little desperation in some ways, because I could see, you know, the CARES Act and the PPP. I could walk down the street or drive down the street and see that other businesses were doing okay. And I just felt like if you are a business owner that has lost your business, it is clear that you are being ignored, that the other businesses around you are being triaged because the need is so great. And so it just kind of got my mind thinking, hey, you know, is there a technology-based solution that could help fix this? And luckily, there is, you know, people already doing crowdfunding with great success. You know, all the GoFundMes that you've heard about in the news, Charity Water was a huge inspiration for me to see what those guys have done. And the Barstool Fund also, which launched over New Year's, has done a fantastic job in providing resources for small businesses. So, you know, I kind of just like connected the dots and thought my experience can lead the solution for these small business owners that have been impacted like me. And so that's kind of what led me here.
How do you decide who gets the funding?
Great question. So on our website, if you go and you look, there is a voting element. Right? The voting element is there to help us gauge the community support that the various applicants have. So if people have more votes, that means that they've directed more people to the site that have voted, which is a huge ask for anyone. You know, stop your day, go to this website and vote for me. So that's one way that we gauge community support. We're also going through their experience financially, and we've required them to give us some financial metrics to give us an idea of how successful they have been in the past. So the combination of those two things kind of guides the decision making.
Dave, we've all experienced losses of businesses in our community, in some cases businesses that meant a whole lot. But what about the idea that there are extinction events, or that there are just changing market conditions, and that these business owners who we know and who've become part of our lives are probably going to, you know, are probably going to figure something out once we get out from under all this? Why are the grants important right now?
Well, they're really important because many of these people have been hit so hard from COVID that they actually don't have the opportunity to come back and do something new. You know, the one common theme that keeps coming up with every interview I have is a theme of, I paid my employees out of my savings because I wanted to take care of them. So as COVID is going month after month after month, these business owners are being bled dry because they're trying to take care of the people around them. When they're forced to close, they are financially and emotionally bankrupt. And when you are in that position with your credit cards maxed out, you have no equity in your home because you took your home, all the equity out, it makes it more difficult to get funding from anybody. And I also think that in our climate, with all the stimulus money, all the free money that's being printed, there are protections in place to detect fraud. And a lot of times these business owners are being flagged because their personal balance sheets are so terrible. So they really are, many of these people are on the verge of sinking into poverty. And I think that, again, is a huge misuse of talent. And I think they have a lot more to offer our world and our communities.
If you're just joining us, we're talking today about what's going on with small businesses as they adjust to pandemic change, and how we as consumers, workers, and employers are changing too. My guests are David Lynn of the COVID Rescue Fund and Jeffrey Sanchez Burks of Michigan Ross School of Business. Jeffrey, you've written and talked a lot about the things that businesses need in addition to money to make it through this time. You've talked about that emotional acknowledgement that is important. What are some of the systems of support that you think are getting people through to the extent that people are getting through this right now?
You know, there's some very innovative, some very low-tech, innovative ways people are coming together. So you are seeing wonderful cooperation among previously competing small businesses. We've seen some sort of the emergence of what you could call like a flash huddle or a flash mob, where with a little bit of organizations, you get small business owners together to share stories about what's working, what's not working, like in the early days. How do you get these styrofoam or paper things for takeout? And where do you find these supplies? And what are you doing for this or that? Just because there is so much inefficiency, not only in resource allocation, like Dave's talking about, but also just information asymmetries. People will find out this, but they don't have their normal get-togethers to be able to share information. And a lot of small business owners aren't part of these large chambers of commerce where there's a lot of information that is centralized and disseminated. And so part of that gathering is not just for social emotional support, but also just for information sharing. So there is a need for more of like what Dave's doing in terms of being very entrepreneurial and thinking what areas are not being addressed, what businesses aren't being taken care of. And putting aside those that, you know, there's attrition and extinction moments, as you mentioned, where are there sort of lost opportunities? It's not that necessarily every business will return as it was, but I loved Dave's earlier point about we don't want mismatches in talents. How can we make optimal use? How can we help people really leverage their strengths? And so, you know, disasters are sort of a hotbed for innovation. And I think it's really important to foster and support a lot of innovative thinking about how we can be more resilient, right? From population ecology, the notion of resiliency isn't that you always stay strong, it's that you can bounce back as an ecosystem. And if you think about our community and the business community, it's not that each thing returns as it was, but collectively, we're able to build back. And as a participant in the 1994 earthquake in Southern California, you don't just build back, but you try to build back better.
Right. Jeffrey, I've heard people say anecdotally that their workplaces right now just feel so wound up. Everyone is under piles of stress at home, dealing with kids, maybe caring for relatives or friends who have fallen sick with COVID and just trying to keep their economic lives going. And there are pressures within how we're working right now and everybody being on soul-killing Zoom meetings all the time or having to, you know, sort of think through all the physical distancing in their workplaces if they are back in person. And tempers flare over stuff that normally would get worked out pretty quickly if we were all right beside each other. Do you think that there will be some changes coming out of this in the way we talk about conflicts at work or the way people manage conflict or their own situations?
Yeah. Well, for example, we're finding that this old strategy of, you know, how are you doing? Or everyone say, let's share a piece of good news, isn't working. This idea that everyone should have a positive moment or that things are simple aren't working. Instead, we're finding that organizations are finding more traction when they acknowledge the emotional complexity in people's lives. And so a very simple version of this is rather than ask people how they're doing or ask for a positive piece of news, they say, everyone share two different emotions that they're feeling. And people are like, wow, you're only asking for two. I could put so many more. But already in two different emotions, we're now getting to that complexity. And you're doing a number of things. One is you're helping legitimize what is going on in people's lives. And it's authentic because you're not trying to just mold everyone into the same area. And we are redefining notions of professionalism, which have, you know, put very strict boundaries between work and non-work. And it's very difficult to do it. If I don't hear somebody's baby or dog or something going on in the background, I think they're, what do the kids say? Like they're fronting. Like there's clearly reality going on in people's lives. And so we might emerge from this with a much more authentic human way of defining professionalism.
Yeah. If we think back to the early months of the pandemic, I remember there being a lot of ink spilled over the way that employers were having to get real about, you know, these emotional acknowledgments and, you know, telling people, go take some time with your kids today if you need to. And then many businesses seem to have experienced what I think of as urgency creep. Deadlines are deadlines. And as people like Dave Lynn can easily tell you, there are lease payments to be made and there are employees whose paychecks need to cash on time. And maybe the staffing cutbacks have shifted a lot more responsibility onto the plates of those who remain employed. Do you think that there are ways for us to push back against the pace that we're in right now? And Dave, I wonder, let's hear from Jeffrey first. But Dave, I wonder if you have some thoughts on that, too.
It is interesting. Survey after survey, and this is global trends, are showing that the vast majority of people don't want to return full time to the office. They say they're productive, but they also report that they're miserable. And so it's not even clear what it is that would help people. From high school here all the way to the undergrads, there was a big request to have in-person class. And then each day, fewer people would actually be in class. They said, well, that's not exactly what I had hoped for. And so I think we need to have some spirit of experimenting, an iterative approach to this, redefining of what the new world will look like, because we're not going to get it right and it will change.
Hey, Dave Lynn, I know that there are certain things that we can push back on and say, let's just slow it down. And there are certain realities of running a business. Do you think there are ways in which those things might change?
Well, I think like it's from a small business perspective, I'd say that the changes that you guys are talking about, to me, I just see a lot of uncertainty. Like if from a small business perspective, when you are relying on volume to so that you can pay your bills, it just highlights to me that the post-pandemic world for certain businesses is going to be incredibly challenging. You know, imagine if you are a downtown restaurant or downtown retail spot that relies on office workers being around for lunch, and that's where you do all your volume. Those office workers are not there because of all of the reconfiguration that Jeffrey's talking about. You know, like, what do you do? You know, you have to do other things. And there are, you know, numerous examples of how the post-pandemic world is going to be different. And small business owners, you know, generally speaking, don't have a cushion to iterate a lot. You know, you kind of have to get it right in the first few times, or you don't have money to pivot. So I think it's going to be very challenging for small businesses moving forward.
Dave Lynn, he was formerly the CEO of the coffee chain Espresso Royale in Southeast Michigan and the owner of Bubble Island, the bubble tea shop, and he's now running the COVID Rescue Fund. We've also been talking with Jeffrey Sanchez-Burks, a behavioral scientist and a professor at Michigan Ross School of Business. Dave, Jeffrey, it's been a real pleasure talking to you, and thanks for taking a few minutes with us for, I guess, that emotional acknowledgement.
Thanks for having me on.
Yep, thanks.